How was your trip?
Good. Really good.
Where did you go?
I went to Orlando, the
rock and roll capital of the world.
Yes, the punk rock capital of North America.
Yes.
Actually, I used to travel a ton. I don't travel very often anymore, and my daughter is 3, and so we were going to be out at the beach near Orlando and flying in and out of that airport, and so my wife said we should take her to Disney World. So we did. That is not a relaxing vacation.
I was about to ask.
Yeah, so I will just read you an excerpt of something that I put down that said, greetings from Orlando, where I can pretty much guarantee that while being dragged around Disney World by a semi-lunatic in a princess dress isn't exactly the equivalent of the Bataan Death March, whichever way it is, there are times when you find yourself standing in a rain-soaked plastic poncho and it feels, from your perspective, similar. So, there is a little bit of that. We met a lot of princesses. I got to see a 3-year-old blow off one princess for another. That was kind of cool. So, she gave Rapunzel the hand as she walked over to
hierarchy
hang out with
of princes.
Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was, if I ever had any doubt that I just lost my cool card and I could never find it again, it might be in Orlando.
You burned it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that sounds awful.
It was fine. You know, and the thing is like, it makes you appreciate the things that you have as part of your circadian rhythms when you're home. So it's nice to get back to the podcast.
I'll tell you what I appreciate, and that is the fact that we are sitting in air conditioning tonight.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing is, so my kiddo is staying with her grandparents for a few days, and so that means that we're not actually banished to the garage where we all were trying to sweat ourselves down to about 150. And instead, we're inside in my living room. And yeah, soak it up, boys.
I'll tell you one thing before we get started here. Speaking of losing your cool card, yeah, once you start calling your child a kiddo, that's
sure.
I
have everything, but like some sort of congratulatory fanny pack. Like it's like.
Well, I will say this: her birthday is coming up. She's going to be 4, and I do think that the party they're throwing her is it's going a little bit of a ways to get some of your street cred back.
Yeah, that's true. We're not making everybody wear a dead Kennedy's T-shirt, but instead, we are. I have hired a local kin. They call themselves a kindy band. They play the original compositions, but they're designed for an audience of kids. And what I'm finding is that the dads universally love the shit out of these guys because in between they tell these super terrible, like seriously awful jokes that just make all the moms groan and all the dads are like, yeah, right on. That's exactly what that is. But I talked to one of the guys. I saw him off stage, and I talked to him this year about how all the dads were so excited the last time that we saw them play, and he was like, yeah, we really love telling those jokes in between the sets because you can hear the hopes and expectations die of all the people who get let down by those jokes. And so they just use them until the audience starts to figure them out ahead of time, and then they find something else.
What's
terrible.
The – where does the king –
Oh, yeah, that one's particularly terrible. Where does the king keep his armies in his sleeveys is the answer, really terrible.
Every one of those jokes, it's just the sound of their dreams and aspirations dying in a fireball blaze.
The one that is not particularly funny, but it is more funny than that, is what's the pirate's favorite letter?
R?
No, the C. and they do it with in the gravelly pirate voice, and all the moms go, "We gotta go. We've got to get out of here."
So, Kevin, tell Shane what the invitations are going to look like.
Yeah, so basically, we're doing lanyards and credentials for my kid's birthday party because this kindy band is going to come play a set in my backyard, and my wife is making me dress up in a black security shirt with sunglasses and an earpiece. So, anyway, it's going to be super exclusive and hard to get into. And then
sounds like it.
Yeah, which is, you know, if you know where my backyard is,
That Rapunzel princess in Disneyland that gave the hand, she's pissed that she can't get into this birthday party.
No, she's gonna, she'll probably still be dressed like a princess for that, too. So, anyway, it's fun to get out of town. It's great to be back. And
in air conditioning.
In air conditioning. And what better way to wash off my Middle America or take everything that's in your wallet experience that is Orlando, Florida, and get back to a grunge record from 20 years ago.
A lot of songs about not so happy childhoods and not so happy dolls.
No. Yeah. All of that stuff. So, anyway, I think we should probably play the theme music.
Let's do that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Somebody Likes It, the show where we take a record that a lot of people like that we don't know that well and sit around for an hour and have a lot of drinks and tell each other how we feel about the record. Is that safe to say, guys?
I think that would be a fair assessment.
We curse it and discuss it.
Oh, we're going to curse this one today. But before we start, well, I will at least, before we start with that, Ryan, what the fuck are you talking about?
I was watching, it was last night or, I don't know, recently. I believe it was Seth Meyers, and he told this story, and of course he had a punchline at the end of it, but I think it kind of stands up on its own. Apparently, he has found out through the wonders of the information age that Rodney Dangerfield's widow keeps a vessel of some sort of her late husband's sweat in the refrigerator, I guess as a way to remember him. Which inevitably
does she use it as a condiment?
Let's hope not. It begs the question. I'm trying to imagine the collection process. And granted, Rodney Dangerfield did seem like a kind of sweaty dude.
I think the thing that I can't get away from when you're telling this story is like you think about like the Declaration of Independence, right? Like, they have to keep that paper.
I'm seeing the direct line from point A to point B here.
Yeah, stay with me. So at the Smithsonian or wherever it lives, they have to put it in a box. Stay with me. They have to, put it in a special box, and it gets only certain kinds of air, and it's like,
sure.
That's how they keep that paper from disintegrating, and I'm like, Rodney Dangerfield's sweat can't be any more valuable than that, so if she's
I would say it's substantially less valuable than the Declaration of Independence in the Smithsonian.
Do you think over time that it just gradually gets pushed back to the back of the refrigerator by
they should be cleaning it out at some point?
Like, oh yeah, his sweat's in here.
It's like, I'm sorry, I thought this was pickles.
Done.
Yeah.
Kevin,
you've been.
I'm going to wipe some tears.
That was a good time right there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
You picked this week's record. You start this off.
Yeah, so to the item in hand. So one of the things that.
We need to talk about what the record is.
Yeah, so this week I chose the whole album and all of the whole album, Live Through This. That actually came out 4 days after Kurt Cobain died, and there's a lot that fascinates me about, just sort of the circumstances surrounding the making of this record and who influenced it or didn't influence it, and sort of its, a lot of Courtney Love's public persona and the controversy that still surrounds her today, kind of in some ways started with this album, and so I thought. Right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you like it or you don't like it or you're unmoved by it one way or the other, it's a really interesting sort of footnote in rock history and something worth talking about for an hour. So we're gonna.
Let's.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, there are a lot of places that we could start with this, but I think one particularly, I always like to go back and see if I can find a review or two that came out when the record was fresh, because opinions tend to vary over time with regard to an album's staying power or status, and they get colored by history. And so David Fricke from Rolling Stone's a great writer, and one that I think is usually particularly entertaining. And I'll just share a few sentences of his. This is his lead for covering this record. He said, "Forget just for a moment everything you've heard about Courtney Love for the past 3 years. The tales, apocryphal and otherwise, of substance misadventure, her, this part's in italics, lively marriage to Nirvana's Kurt Cobain and checkered passage into motherhood, the endless Yoko Ono comparisons and dragon bitch disses, then go straight to the lusty, vengeful, lunge-boasting fuck you that blows the roof off of I Think I Would Die 3/4 of the way through Live Through This. Even if you think you have serious reservations about punk rock brats living on major label largesse or believe profanity is the last refuge of the inarticulate, the sheer force of Love's corrosive lunatic wail, not to mention the guitar drum wrath unleashed in its wake, is impressive stuff, a scorched earth blast of righteous indignation as feral and convincing as anything in Johnny Rotten's Bark and Spittle repertoire." Now, there's a lot of pomp and circumstance in that lead,
bullshit,
but it's interesting.
Courtney Love does not deserve such highfalutin words
to be composed. You got to remember, that's a record that's a review that was written in its time. Like when that record came out.
So. I remember how I felt about it in its time, and I had only listened to the singles at the time, and boy, let me tell you, those were the best things on that fucking album, and they were, well, we'll come back around to me.
I actually respectfully disagree about that last sentiment, but we'll get to that. Going back and reading the reviews as I did, and you gotta remember, so this record came out 4 days after Kurt Cobain died, but those reviews were penned, given magazine lead times, they were penned probably a month beforehand, so
sure.
They didn't have, it wasn't like they were just being nice because she was grieving.
Right.
This is what they thought, but, you gotta remember, at that time, that was, this sort of thing was, just what... where everybody thought music was going, and it was a time when we thought,
thank God it didn't go there.
Well, and for a time, you can make the argument that it was. Just like
you said.
with the Pavement thing, how there were distillations of that band's sound. There were certain influences that were super pervasive in this type of rock music at this time.
It's true. Listening to this record myself, this very much sounds like the product of Mrs. Kurt Cobain. For better or worse.
Sure.
No marriage pun intended. But anyway, Shane, you and I were just looking at ridiculous YouTube comments.
That's true, we were.
There's some minor controversy among the darker corners of the web that perhaps Kurt wrote some of this record, but he was a better songwriter than this.
I was going to say, if Kurt wrote some of this record, then he did it while he was passed out on the floor after consuming a bottle of whiskey, or he was asleep and maybe he dreamed and accidentally picked up a guitar, farted it out. I don't know, but he was definitely capable of far, far, far superior writing than this.
Well, certainly, I do think a few of the songs on this record, and they're not the singles, do sound like lesser Nirvana B-sides.
Well, yeah, but that shit was pervasive everywhere, especially if you lived in the same house with him.
Well, and then, we can take it a half step further than that, which is to say that he is reportedly sang backing tracks on a number of the tracks that are on this record.
Yeah,
on two of them.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was credited, but
I think he was. It definitely was.
There seems to be some controversy as to whether or not he sang on these or not, or... who knows?
Anyway, I'm at the very least, even if his voice is not on a number of these tracks, and I tend to believe that I think it's possible that he's in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's certain, clearly, that footprint is
it's pretty pervasive.
This isn't done in a snow globe. He was
Yeah,
he was there.
We shared a house with the woman and child.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I was saying a second ago. I mean, even if his voice wasn't on the record, his fingerprints are all over it because they were all over everywhere at that time.
Mm-hmm. And especially his own house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Shane, you in particular have already made allusions to this, but you were averse to this record.
And
take us down the path, man. Like, so what is
so
it? That,
much.
What is it that strikes you sideways? Like,
I have a couple of different things to say. I have a lot of notes here. I want to.
Well, for those who don't know, Shane's kind of a lyric guy, so I suspect some of this is coming from that direction.
Oh yeah. Well, no. It all starts with Courtney Love's voice, but her inane lyrics definitely are there. I credit where credit's due. I mean, I do think that, especially at the time, like I was going to say proto-feminist, but it was definitely her obsession and occupation with the way that women are treated in society and treated as sex objects, objectified. Definitely deserves recognition.
Well, she's not a stupid woman. She's just extremely irritating.
She just writes stupid fucking lyrics. I mean, you can have a great idea in mind, but you can have a great story that you want to tell. But if to get from point A to point B, the words in between that you're telling the story within suck, then your fucking story sucks. Period. However, the thing we'll just start with it. Well, I'll tell you this real quick. So today I had to go to the store and get myself something to drink. And while I was in the store, Living on a Prayer was playing.
Can we just leave that behind at some point?
No. I was listening to it for the second time and making extra notes. And once I noticed it was playing, I remember thinking to myself, my God, I would love to listen to that Bon Jovi album again compared to this crap. I have to respectfully disagree.
You're going to be – this is to each his own, but – Sounds like the other two of us are. I'm not quite in that.
If I never hear Bon Jovi again in my life, it'll be too soon.
I spent more time putting off listening to this record than anything that we've talked about or discussed so far listening to, because I remembered. Well, okay, this is. I was trying to think the whole time I was listening to it. The best way I could describe her vocals. Here's one of my notes. The sound of Courtney Love – I can't really read it because I'm just scribbling. The sound of Courtney Love's voice makes me want to punch a hole in something. But I finally figured out what – when I listen to her sing, what it reminds me of. You guys have gone to karaoke bars before, right?
Sure.
Have you ever?
Yeah, with you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. My birthday. Okay. Well, maybe I was
who's drunk
more
now?
Than once.
It's just part of the story here, son. Every time you go to a karaoke bar, there's inevitably the drunkest person in the room will grab a mic, almost fall down, sing completely out of time and totally off key, and that's what Courtney Love sounds like to me on her major label debut. She has the most irritating, off-kilter. It sounds like she is fucking wasted and can't hold.
Well, I suspect that's somewhat by design, because at this time it was kind of cool to, eschew the trappings of typical corporate rock.
If it was designed, it was designed specifically for me to feel like I need to put nails through both of my eyeballs. It's the most irritating.
Well, you'd think you'd want to do it through your ears. I'm just saying.
Yes.
You weren't
okay.
seeing well, the music.
I was. Yeah. Okay. Point taken. All right. Through my ears.
Can you taste purple?
Are you a synesthete?
Anyway,
but that, I hear you. Like, yeah, there are one thing that I notice that she does that I find a little bit off.
Besides, suck.
Well, specifically that I find a little bit off-putting is she bends her words the same way that
a downward thing.
Well, like that fucking Cher does. Like there's an aspect to the way that she pronounces certain words that I was like, that annoys the shit out of me.
It's a syllabic
thing. Where is it? Yeah, where do I know it from? And. That is where, it's a very...
No, it's an affectation that I get. I know what you're talking about, and it kind of, the lyrics kind of bend towards, flatness or something, or sounding like you're, like purposefully bored.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and
it's
I mean, it's not the same thing as, but it in a way sort of reminds me of, like, if you've ever met a girl who's otherwise smart but like ends every declarative statement with a question mark. Like the other day, I went to the library and I picked out some books, and you know, so I got Moby Dick, which I hadn't read before, but I'm really liking Melville. Like, well, you sound like an idiot.
It's like, or Irish, you know, like they're Europeans that like everything they say sounds like it's a question, even if it's a declarative statement. Anyway,
yeah.
But you know what I mean, like.
But certainly, yeah, that it's an affectation that's annoying in much the same way as. Oh, what's his name from Metallica ending every lyric with
James Hetfield.
James Hetfield going, "Oh!" The end of every lyric.
It's like he's got something in his throat.
Forgive you, nah.
Well, do you have a line in mind or a song in mind?
Yeah,
which
you know,
he does that.
So,
because I'm saying maybe right now we should take a break and play a whole song.
Well,
not a whole song. And let's not beat that horse. All podcasts, but
yeah. So you know what? Like, let's. I don't know whether this will fall into that category or not, but let's start with. Let's start with one that sounds like it's the most heavily influenced, but for a lot of people who hear this record and write about it, one that sounds like it's got a real Nirvana stamp on it, which is Violet. So why don't we start with Violet? Let's play that now. You guys ready?
Yeah, do it.
It's Violet.
And the sky was made of amethyst, and all the stars are just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how to say.
So, yeah, I think the big thing about Violet is then the reason that it gets compared to Nirvana, aside from the obvious familial connection, is that it's the quiet, loud, quiet thing.
Exactly.
Which is also Pixies and, you know, whatever, Bob Mould, and, you know, there are a lot of different bands, certainly of that era, that were fond of that aesthetic. But that's one thing that you find in that song.
Yeah, and it's not that I don't think there are Nirvana influences all over this record. I just think that particular one's maybe a little more lazy than.
Wait, are you saying that there are reviewers that are lazy?
I don't know if you've ever met a music journalist, but they're not necessarily the most
bastion of fitness that they are.
Yes, exactly.
I thought you were talking about the comments section because those are in fact lazy.
And well, yeah, the comments sections are just hilarious, though.
We should get back later. Later, later, later.
Later, later. We'll get to the comments section.
Get to some
YouTube.
Comments on the YouTube channel.
And
about
the devolving nature of discourse.
Oh, it quickly devolves.
Yeah.
Does it ever evolve? Like,
doesn't seem to evolve
in
a,
ever?
I am.
Yeah.
I
not in a positive
once.
Fashion, no.
I mean, once. We took a field trip.
Yeah, good.
Everybody, this is the internet. Keep your hands inside the ride.
Stay with your buddy.
Yeah, sorry, that's an Orlando joke.
Like, you just can't wash it off. You're still having nightmares.
No, it's like a weird salve. But
I want to hear more about weird salves.
Yeah, like that's the weird. Well, anyway,
Orlando ointment.
Another time.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not my favorite song on this record, but it's the one that, other than Doll Parts, that gets kind of bandied about as one of the central songs on this album. It's the first song on the album, and so I thought it was a worthwhile place to start. But yeah, if you're put off by the fact that she has a flat screech, then like that's all over that song.
That's giving her credit.
Yeah.
Well, flat screech.
Oh yeah. I have to say that I'm when I was listening to this, I already went in knowing how much I disliked her vocals, but I go into every album giving it a chance.
Hoping for the best.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at my notes, I'm definitely pretty charitable to a lot of these songs.
Was there anything that you were surprised by?
We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
There was one song that I really liked, and I was really surprised by that.
Okay.
Turns out, it's the only fucking cover on the album.
All right.
But, so what I was shocked. So I'm listening to this. I always give one listen where I don't pay attention to anything else, and then I give it a second listen. And while I'm listening to it, I get on Wikipedia or other things and read about the band and read about the album while I'm listening to it. And I was bowled over fucking shocked that how high the reviews of this album were.
They are.
Blender, 5 stars. Rolling Stone, one of the top 500 albums of all time. Entertainment Weekly gave it a B+. Rolling Stone said, "Love delivers punk not only as insinuating as Nirvana's, but as corrosive as the Sex Pistols." It makes I know that I saw that Pitchfork also gave it 4 stars.
Billboard was
5.
9 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable to me. How am I so far off?
Well, I do think there's some of
and
that
I have
too.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt
no,
you.
Go ahead.
I have no issues with Courtney Love. I mean, she can be an irritating presence. I actually find her to be extremely amusing when she's not singing songs.
Yeah.
She's never boring. No. I do find her irritable often. But
You get irritable watching her. You find her irritating.
I find her irritating. It makes me irritable. Thank you, Shane.
Yes. Sorry. I'm just helping you out, man.
I appreciate that.
But I think that she's relatively amusing. I mean, not relatively. I think she's incredibly amusing, again, when she's not singing or writing songs. But I'm flabbergasted at how high these reviews are for this record. I find it unlistenable.
I think that knowing your a little bit about your sensibilities with regard to popular music and indie music, like, I could see how this might run contrary to
Well,
that.
I was actually thinking this is about as far away from Harriet Wheeler of the Sundays as you can get.
No, sure. But I love abrasive. You know, I come from that background. Like, I love abrasive music.
Well,
you do in
the
right context.
Speed metal and crap.
Well,
sometimes.
But here's the other thing that I think we're kind of overlooking, which is that there are two factors here that I think play a part. One is everybody wants to be first. So if you're a music reviewer, you want to be out in front of a new trend, like, and there's something that you feel like is a flag bearer or a potential flag bearer for that new trend, I think the possibility of that garnering positive reviews under this context maybe makes sense in its time. Doesn't make it right or wrong, but I think it's more likely. And beyond that, like, I just think in the world of reviews in particular, I talk a lot about, you know, when publications go back and find religion on a particular or revision
on something that, you know, the general public has come around to, you know, herald as
there's a lot of Me Too journalism.
Yeah.
That I think happens.
Well,
and some of that,
and also she had the Nirvana stamp of approval, or at least the Kurt stamp of approval, and like,
sure.
You know, they almost never had anything negative written about them, at least in the music press. Now, they did plenty in, you know, your Vanity Fairs and what have you, but...
Sure.
But, you know, it couldn't have hurt that she was married to, you know, what everybody was heralding as, you know, voice of his generation, genius, you know, punk god.
Do you think that there's something to be said, going down that road, about the fact that where the world was in the early to mid 90s, where indie, where the radio world was turned on its head. I mean, where the Breeders
sure.
were selling millions of records,
right.
Millions more than the Pixies ever sold.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there people like to talk a lot about how that decade was, or at least the early part of it, the real night, you know, like how the 70s weren't really the 70s until the mid 70s.
Sure.
The 60s weren't really the 60s, air quotes again, until, you know, the
later part.
Well,
they kind
of
get defined by the next decade being different than what they were, and then revisionist history.
It's the part that catches the public fancy the most.
Sure.
And as far as the 90s are, I mean, nobody thinks – when people think about 90s music, they don't –
You think flannel and grunge.
Right.
And,
you don't think about, I just want to fly, you know, like the stuff that was in the late 90s. You think about the early
90s. You might not. You know, who was that?
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of their
Sugar name. Ray.
Sugar Ray. You win.
Yeah. Do you? Do you win?
but I think, you know, we, when I say we, I mean collectively, journalists that I'm not a part of journalism. I don't know why I said we collectively journalists.
You write published site.
That's not what I'm referring to.
Public criticism in one
sure,
form.
Sure, yeah, or public remembrance of that. I think that you know, we're quick to chalk up the early 90s. There's a lot of – to slacker and slacktivism and irony and, you know, and stuff like that. But there was a lot of a focus on social justice and social equality in the early 90s and in a way that's really now paying off with the millennials and coming of age. And so being that this record, it's – main focus in my mind is female exploitation in one form or another, and being fronted by a arguably wounded female front person, I could see why a lot of people would jump on board the whole bandwagon, just because of that in and of itself. You already went from a 7 to a 10 in the reviews. What the fuck was that, dude?
I don't know. I'm blaming the San Francisco earthquake. The Napa Valley earthquake.
It's probably reached here by now.
No, I don't know what happened. It looks like there's a little hiccup in GarageBand, which we record these in. So anyway, we seem to have cleared that up. We're ready to get back to the Adam and Ham. Shane, you have a hand up in the back?
Yeah, I think it's closer to Westworld. I think that your computer didn't like what I was saying about Hole's album Live Through This, and then
that sounds plausible.
It's grown, it's a sentient being now, and just shut the fuck down because
the machines are coming for all of us.
That's true.
We know that.
That's my computer's version of the fetal position.
I would have loved it if a picture of Yul Brynner.
It's like what your dog does when it have a thunderstorm. The computer was just like, I can't take it.
It's like, no more. Thank you.
That was the computer version of hiding. I think it's more of a malevolence.
Anyway, now I was a little bummed that it actually happened for a variety, not the least of which is that you want your stuff to work. But beyond that, we were kind of in an interesting place with that chat.
Okay, I didn't want to sound too caustic about that.
Really? What do you sound like when you do want to sound caustic?
No. I have been sounding caustic about the rest of the album, but not that particular thing. I feel like at that time, in the place in the world at that time, that a spotlight was shown on civil rights and social injustice in a way that heretofore had not been worked into the popular consciousness.
Or at least not since the 60s.
Well, no. True, but I mean, we're talking about movies. I mean, it went fucking mainstream at
sure.
that time.
You know, wiped out an entire, like, genre or, you know, a style of music that was prevalent, you know, through the 80s and early part of the 90s.
Oh, glam metal?
Well, and you can
oh, my God, how have I not thought of a glam metal album to dangle in
front
of you. Oh,
man.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you just put a thought in my head, son.
But you can also make the argument, in all fairness and whatever torture Shane subjects us to, like, notwithstanding, you can also make the argument that those movements would have petered out eventually anyway, because they're sort of based on, you know, the cotton candy of, you know, the saccharin with nothing in the middle.
Well,
like, and this was supposed to be based on sincerity, in theory.
It was. Yeah. No. I mean, not even in theory. Like we were saying before, like you're seeing it come to fruition now, where people at the time that were in college that were listening to these types of music, and this is a period of time where popular music was reflecting back actual values, rather than pop songs about going and surfing or going to the club or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Popular.
Being mad at your dad.
For no.
Rocking.
Wanting to rock.
Rocking.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you and
general,
I.
General by the way, rocking.
I have to clear my throat real quick. I'm glad that as soon as Kevin said being mad at your dad, Ryan and I just locked eyes.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you the image that popped into your head was what popped into mine, which was the Twisted Sister.
Twisted Sister. What do you want to do with your life?
And then he turns in a circle really quickly and turns
he's
into
like,
D.
He's
Snyder.
Like blown away by
and the dad
like
goes out the window.
Power of the rocking.
Jesus. That guy even got one vacation, like beach vacation out of that song. Pisses me off to know.
Lots of beach vacation.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Did you see in the late 90s where D. Snyder became like a he started self-financing these weird action movies?
Of course he did.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
You all need
they're
to
like,
become familiar
and
with
they're
this.
Like, hey, we've got a, I have this crazy cracker idea. Who can I take it to that has money and doesn't know how to use it?
Yeah.
D. Snyder!
Yeah.
Are these Van Damme vehicles?
Similar. No. He was the lead actor.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. No, he wasn't just producing it. And he had like a long, curly kind of mullet, like his hair was tied back. Anyway, we're getting off track, which would be so easy to do when discussing
D.
Snyder.
Speaking of body issues, let's circle back and talk about one of my favorite tracks on this record, one that I really like, is Plump.
And I agree with you on that. I'm with you.
And I think we ought to give this one a spin and see what we have.
Before
to think
we
about.
Do that, I want to say this, that it's the only, in my opinion, it's by far the best song on the album. And I think it's funny, like in my notes, it says, Plump, decent song. And then the next track, Asking for It, not very decent song. But we saw this when you were outside, Ryan, a second ago. Kevin and I
did you see my
took
notes?
A gander at your notes. And you have a couple songs. I'm going to pick up your notes here. You have a couple songs with
my
an asterisk. And one of them is Plump. And then off to the side, it's an asterisk. And an asterisk. Star equals rocks.
Now, Ryan, as far as you could be a cartographer with a key like that.
Oh, that's right.
Just to the point.
Well, you know,
that shit just rocks.
It just bothers me when I see an asterisk and there is no corresponding definition to the asterisk. So, you know, if everything went wrong and I just completely forgot, I would now know.
It's like Shutter rocks. Island. For you, like your wandering,
just like that, yes.
In a world that your mind has created.
Now I'm just confused. Anyway, all right, let's give Plump a spin. Here's Plump, you guys.
All right,
aight. So for me, that song in particular, in addition to maybe a couple others, really sounds like Mrs. Kurt Cobain, you know, like this woman shares a bedroom with the primary songwriter in Nirvana, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I like Nirvana a lot. So, you know.
Yeah, at least the signature on that, like the way that she does her wail in that song.
Well, and the insistent riffing.
It's the guitar
and,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, like that sort of insistent, propulsive riffing.
Right.
Absolutely, you know, sounds like Nirvana, but again, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, and it's also not an uncommon thing. Again, we were talking about it earlier, or I guess I was talking about it, how his fingerprints were all over music at that time.
Right. And, you know, and I don't necessarily think it's a terrible thing, YouTube comment section aside, to believe that, you know, she was sitting around in the bedroom writing songs and probably asking for his feedback, but I don't for a second
it
think
it probably happened.
Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be weird. It'd almost be weirder if it didn't, you know?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, like you're in that close proximity to somebody and they have no influence on what it is that you
I wish I had a guitar right now to show you what she's doing. I mean, it's just she's playing just a...
Well, that makes for some great podcasts, too.
Yeah, I know, but I could show you. She's playing a power chord and then lifting a finger and putting it back, lifting a finger, putting it back, lifting a finger, putting it back.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like she's changing any chord formation and then playing
Shani is miming strumming.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What did you say? Theater of the mind?
Theater of the mime.
Theater of the mime. So I'm not sure like when I was going to work this in, but I would like to at some point touch on the fact that the name of this record is Live Through This, and it came out 4 days after her husband had committed suicide. And you know, Live Through This actually comes from the lyrics of one of the songs on the record. And so, and I'm sure they were all printed and ready to go. So it's not like it was changed to reflect that, right. You know. And then later on in the same year, like her bass player dies of a heroin overdose.
It's an oddly prescient
name for a record, and it's not the only one. Like, what was Notorious B.I.G.'s name of his last record, Ready to Die?
Yeah,
like,
no, it's happened a few times. There was a Bueller record that came out on 9/11 that essentially like had a plane on the cover and like
about to fly into a building or something.
I mean, it wasn't about to fly into a building, but the title of the record, which escapes me at the moment, like was one that you would like. Well, if I could see into the future, I would never ever in a million years call this record this and have a plane on the cover. Like, there's weird shit like that. When you look back,
you know what? I honestly think that we should go on to InfoWars and take this stuff.
Oh, well, it's certainly a government conspiracy, of course.
But conspiracy of sorts.
I don't know if either of you guys know the name of the one that is the most oddly prescient and sort of tragic and awful all at the same time. Do you guys remember Kirstie McCall?
She got her head cut off.
She got her head cut off by a motorboat, like while she was like recording her final record, she was already in the can or anything, but it was, the record was called, I shit you not, and she was in a tropical locale, but it was called Tropical Brainstorm, which, I mean, I guess everything had been printed at that point, but... It's just a weird phenomenon.
At the very least, I think we can agree that there are sort of terrible coincidences that happen.
I wonder if I get online right now, if I can find Alex Jones's number.
Let's
okay, by the way, let me tell you this.
Hey, he's local here in Austin.
No. When you type in Alex into Google, immediately the first thing that comes up is Alex Jones.
Alex Jones.
Mm. Yeah, just showing once again that the internet loves the lowest common denominator.
Anyway, I do think that the execution of that song is pretty spot on. I think it's pretty interesting. And and I do think that when you look back, based on what the name of the record is, maybe that is a little bit of what gives the critic crowd a fondness for that staying power, because that whole trend of the way that they of that sound didn't last, and that band didn't last. It lasted longer than people necessarily thought. Maybe certainly longer than Chain hoped that it would.
But the sort of grunge iteration of that band didn't stay. I mean, you know, they sort of evolved into a, I don't know.
Well, and frankly,
glamier
like, just
version
like in
of
terms
themselves.
Of like song construction, I really enjoy "Celebrity Skin." Is probably my favorite whole song.
I'm with you on that.
I don't even remember that song at all. But I think that's mostly because I actively try to block anything with Courtney Love's voice out of my brain, but I literally have no idea what that song was.
Well, we'll spin it in the break.
Yeah, it's another time.
Anyway, it's really interesting, and that's part of the fallout of this whole record is, you know, she's the funny thing is like she and Kurt both espoused this, and certainly him to a large degree during his lifetime. We're very like. I think he was probably confused by his fame to a certain extent, and they espoused that DIY aesthetic where in the face of this sort of mind-blowing wealth that they were beginning to acquire, you know, the idea that corporate magazines still suck, that whole thing.
Well, you're really, on the cover of Rolling Stone.
That's that's more a Nirvana discussion, but I do think mm-hmm. that it bleeds into what it is she was after here. Like, you
well,
know, appealing
I think the dichotomy between the two of them, you know, one could argue, and I don't necessarily think it's 100% correct, that Kurt sort of eschewed fame, whereas she shot towards it with, you know, every, you know, last fiber of her being, tried to claw her way to it, which is, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong with being ambitious, and I think Kurt was more ambitious than people like to realize.
Well, anybody that wants, you know, initially at least, if you have the dream of being a rock star, being on stage in front of tens of thousands of people, and then the reality sets in, and for uncomfortable people, introverted people, like, that's not easy to deal with.
Well, and the problem, you know, that I think he found, and something that I've thought about, is, man, I'll bet it would be fun to be famous for a couple months.
Oh, sure.
And then, Oh, shit, I can't get unfamous.
Oh, you know what? This is a weird story, and I don't really there's no ending to this. It's really just an anecdote, so I'll preface it with that. But a friend of mine who lives in Philly was in New York around the time that Francis Bean, it had to coincide with the time that Kurt was alive and when Francis Bean was there, mm-hmm. and she held that baby.
Like, oh, yeah?
Yeah, they were like, she only told me the story once, and it was somebody I used to work with from another town from Philadelphia, and she said they got out of a cab in New York, and she was standing there and just happened to notice them, and she was like, oh, shit, you know? I enjoy your work or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were like,
and
here,
he's like, hold my baby.
and she did. And she held Frances Bean for a minute. And,
you know what's crazy?
Gave it back. And, like, you know, she didn't work for Child Protective Services. It all worked out.
You know what's crazy? That child is, or that person is a legal uh-huh. drinking age adult now. And she's actually really smart. Like, I've you know, read some of her comments
And she seems pretty level-headed, which is kind of amazing. And do you know, like, she just, within the past, I guess when she turned 21 or whatever, she inherited his estate. And I just thought this number was interesting. Just guess. Like,
man,
what?
I haven't got a clue.
It's crazy.
Probably over $100.
It is
between $100 and $142.
It is $141. No, it was
Bob Barker. I get to come on down?
No, you don't get to come on down. Yeah. Just realistic. Just,
Bob Barker doesn't come on down anymore.
Hey, anyway, you know what? Just let me live my dream.
We're devolving, but I do think that, like, it's the kind of thing that, like, it's the kind of number that I was like, it's hard to wrap your head around it.
I'd say it's more than 100 and less than 10 billion.
It's $170
million. $170
million. That's what.
Oh, did I tack on a million?
Yeah.
When I said that earlier?
Yeah. Not as much. But anyway, I just think that, like, you could do a whole, it wouldn't be a very interesting music podcast, but you could do a whole hour on what it would be like to grow up with that kind of money. Like, I can't even imagine. But at the same time, like, it doesn't affect the fact that she's essentially estranged from her mother, and she mm-hmm. never knew her dad, and at the same time, she still seems to be a reasonably rational human being. That's fucking fascinating.
Yeah. I suspect, and I don't actually know one way or the other, that she is not imbibing substances in the same way that her parental lineage did.
Speaking of sure. her parental lineage, I have a lot more to say about live through this.
So let's live through that.
Yeah. Yeah, right, live through me talking about live through this.
Yeah.
Okay. I've already lived through the listening.
Well, why don't we've got another song to play. Why don't we, we're about at a place where we should probably put another one on. Why don't we do Doll Parts, because that's the one that everybody...
Oh, no. Before we do that, I want to read some Courtney Love lyrics. Because it's not just her voice. Like, I get, like my notes say, I know what she's aiming for, but they still make no sense. Like, I get the end, like, I guess the means justify the end here. Like, I understand, and again, she should be commended for tackling this story. It's, you know, it's disgusting. Like, if you look at the cover of the album with the beauty pageant queen with the mascara running down, I think that's pretty heroic. at the time.
Well, sure, and like one thing
pointing
that
out and making it grotesque.
One thing that we haven't talked about, and Ryan mentioned Kristen Pfaff, who died like in June of that same year, like just within 3 months of Kurt passing, she OD'd. And she, part of the reason that she was in that band, well, I mean, I think she was in it for a lot of reasons, but she moved from Minneapolis to Seattle to be in that band. And part of her, what came with her was this, she was a big part of the women's empowerment movement and was very active in Minneapolis on that front. And so I think that that's probably not a coincidence. Like, it is, it's Courtney and all of her, whatever, scars, and these other influences that were directing the band at the time.
Something needs to be definitely, and I feel extremely strongly about this, and I definitely should state it, to be a woman and be so strong, especially in the music business, I mean, the music business now and how exploitative it is, but at the time, how dismissive and exploitative it was. I mean, that definitely needs to be recognized. And I've
certainly read essays by Miss Love. Yeah, not like my homeboys, but actual essays.
Ms.
By Ms. Love. You know, just talking about exposing some of the, you know, crasser practices of the music business that were sort of accepted at the time and, like, kind of standing up for the little guy. And, like, I appreciate that.
I appreciate it, too. It doesn't make me have to appreciate her music.
No, that's true. And she, you know, she goes out of her way to make her music sometimes ugly and painful. And I think that that's, like, you know, I mean, it's, if you appreciate melody and some of the other things that are key to,
if you appreciate melody, then definitely go and listen to another album. That I get what you're saying. Like, it totally makes sense to me. But, however, having said that, I'm gonna read you some lyrics from what?
Just cat noise.
Oh, that's what that was. Yeah. I'm gonna read you some lyrics from one of the songs on Live Through This, and stripped from the context of the song, you'll see how remarkably inane they are, and how lazy they're just. They're so fucking lazy. And if you go and read comments on YouTube, that, as Ryan and I were earlier, when you can skip through the fact that, like, what was it, you know, a rhino's dick, there were lots of...
Something about her anatomy, rhinoceros penis.
It would be accommodated.
Yeah.
Sketchy.
Yeah. Yes. Classic. What, our conversation or that
all,
comment?
All yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Well, once you disassociate yourself from the context of the song, these lyrics are so lazy. It just they reek to me of her polishing off a bottle of red wine and writing quickly lyrics down and then never changing them. For example, supposedly this song had something to do with their daughter Frances being briefly taken from them when CPS intervened because they heard that they were heroin addicts. Rather than writing something eloquent about that, she wrote this: "I want my baby. Where is the baby? I want my baby. There is a baby. There is no milk. There is no milk. There is no milk. There is no milk. Rose white, rose red. Rose up in my head, rose white, rose red."
Yeah, part of that's the chorus of that song.
Part of it's a fucking ball of bullshit.
Well, I think the whole thing's profound.
Yeah. You actually do?
No, I really don't.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
because I was gearing up for a fight there.
For whatever, like I neglected to mention this when we were talking about Frances Bean's upbringing, but I didn't realize this until I read it that that young lady has. You think I sounded like a dad before that? Mm-hmm. That
kiddo,
that gal, that young lass. She didn't read until she was seven. Like if
really?
That, yeah, that to me says like, and I'm more aware of that shit today than I used to be. But like, part of that tells me that like. That just means that your parents aren't really active in your life. Like, if you can't read until you're seven, I mean, she clearly seems to have made up for lost time, and she's
she seems
bright,
smart as a whip now. Yeah,
but yeah, that's a little fucked up. Like, you're, yeah, you know, what do you do? So anyway,
no,
but we're bleeding over. on the third track. I think we should play it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. This is Doll Parts.
I am doll arms, big veins, doll baby. Yeah, they really want you. They really want you. They really do. Yeah, they really want you. They really want you. And I do too.
I've just called an ambulance. I think someone or something is dying in here.
I think she died a long time ago. You know, I'm listening to this song, and right before I go off on a little diatribe about how much credit she deserves for talking about women's exploitation in music and just in general, which she does. But then I'm reading the fucking lyrics to the song and listening to that goddamn self-involved song, and it's so fucking narcissistic. There's really no, there's no insight. She's just pointing out the obvious and doing it in the most narcissistic, least interesting way.
Do you think it would have been more interesting if she was like the proxy for the doll parts, like representing them but not actually being the doll parts?
Well, I mean, it doesn't even have to be her. Yes, perhaps.
I mean, so what do you think she was going for here? It was like dolls are supposed to be pretty, and so she's these. It's some of these parts who
men objectifying women and saying that yes, I'm basically I'm a doll when you look at me, and I'm the sum of my parts. But the way that it's written, let me just read you some of the lyrics. I fake it so real, I am beyond fake, and someday you will ache like I ache. It's 8th grade diary entries. Incredibly narcissistic, and if she's the torchbearer for feminism of the 90s, then they should have.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're paying attention, it's more like Kathleen Hanna.
No, but Ryan, I was.
I know you're not serious.
I'm not being serious remotely. I just a lot of the stuff, a lot of the comments and reviews around that time about this record comment on how. And granted, you know, I keep going back to this. It was important, and they were probably, if not in fact, the most successful female-fronted rock band in history, and that's nothing to sneeze at. However, people have shitty taste sometimes.
You know, sorry to get stuck on this, but I think Heart probably soiled more records. That's semantics.
Well, but within the context of this, of
but
this
certainly
genre,
in this era,
and this point in time, like they were very visible at a very visible time for anybody that was connected to that scene.
And, yeah,
like
it's true.
Hard to get around that.
It's just
but
so
this
bad.
This song in particular does remind me. As Shane knows, when he drove up, I was actually in my car finishing listening to this record because I'd put it off. While Kevin was on vacay with the fam last week, we actually did not record, and so I had 2 weeks to listen to this, and that song in particular made me not want to listen to it, because that song was just everywhere for a while, and it's not good.
It was, and you know, that's the funny thing, is like we were talking about earlier how, and we really should, we'll... Shane, we will play, we won't do it as part of the cast, but we'll play Celebrity Skin for you so you can hear it, like...
I think after we finish this, maybe we get to the point where we talk about their later career and we'll play that song.
Okay, yeah, maybe that makes sense. Yeah, at the very least, like that was a track that I felt like, okay, that it's a little glammier than this.
Certainly.
And they're out from under the specter of like, or certainly as much from the Nirvana umbrella.
Sure.
And, you know, I think, and it's like, it's frankly just a sunnier song. Like, which is interesting because she still plays a little bit broken.
I want to see if her,
kind of her,
if she'd been able to stick. Improve on her, mm-hmm. on her key carrying ability. A little more synth.
I'd say a little bit. What is it?
She carries keys really well, from what I hear.
I don't even know what that means, but you're laughing,
so I'm laughing. You said key.
No idea
He's
what that means.
He's talking like she's a chauffeur or somebody who
You said her key carrying ability, and anyway, I was making that joke.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah. No. That was a very obtuse joke. Like, I have no idea what that meant. What did that mean? Like
a lot less than you're thinking it meant.
Yeah. No, I just don't know what it meant.
You were talking about how she can't carry a tune, and you said her key carrying ability.
I was talking about physical keys, house keys, actual keys.
Like that, she's a janitor.
She has a good ability to carry. It's not hard to carry
a lot of keys on a key ring. All right,
there's no double entendre there.
No, it wasn't
certainly
clever.
Certainly not a good one.
Yeah, well, I know it wasn't clever.
Anyway, but yeah, okay. So we should get into Celebrity Skin before it's all said and done.
No, before I have more to say.
But yeah, but I want to hear. Yeah, go.
I have more to say about this.
Do it. Say it.
So we haven't got. So I've been relentlessly bashing this album, which, in my opinion, deserves relentless bashing. However, that's mostly because of Courtney Love. Her voice is so off-putting. Her lyrics are so inane. But actually, it's a great-sounding record. Production-wise, if you could pull her fucking vocals out, it sounds great.
Like, I'm with you on that.
The guitar tones are great.
It's well-produced. Clearly, like, there was money.
It's well-produced, and it's great. The mix sounds great. You know, Scott Litt mixed it, right?
I did see that.
Yes, Ryan's a big R.E.M. fan, and Scott Litt did.
Scott Litt produced many of R.E.M.'s
records. He did the remix of
In Utero.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a good mix.
Coink-a-dink.
Huh?
That thing. It's coincidence. Like, it's not dissimilar that he ended up working on both of these pieces, like both In Utero and...
Well, yeah, they probably have something to do with each other.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm glad I left that Alex Jones web page up, because I'm going to have to... we'll talk it through later.
Yeah.
But the album sounds great. And sometimes the one thing about it, though, that doesn't sound good, at least in my ears, is how far to the front her voice, her
she's way up in the
horrible
mix.
horrible voice, her voice that it seems sometimes that it's just been recorded to give children nightmares. It's so bad.
Well, and that's why I sent mine away for a few days, because
it sold to my child.
That's like, yeah, surprise, honey. Anyway, but interesting. Like, you can't listen to this and not feel a little bit of the period piece that happened. And you know, she's still touring. I mean, one of the things that I read was that I guess she's in Australia this month doing shows, like solo shows, and she looks like exactly what you'd think she looks like, with like an older,
still raggedy.
Yeah, like you look back, like you look back at certain like starlets or even like rock starlets, and you'd see them when they were younger, and you're like, oh, that was the seed of their fame. Like, she always looked a little like shit.
No,
like,
she looked a little like wrung out, you know.
But I think that's caught up with
road
her.
Hard
I
and put
she,
up. Oh, yeah.
I think she still looks you know what? I don't want to. We're not. We don't.
I'm just curious.
How did this devolve into a conversation, like a catty conversation about Courtney Love's looks?
Well, no, I think it plays to like her
persona,
her public persona, that which she's always sort of promoted, which is sort of like the, what was the name of the person who posted the YouTube full length of this record, Baby Doll Whore,
yeah,
which is sort of like Courtney has always sort of courted the, you know, sort of pretty and innocent, along with the ragged and world weary and all that, and done it sort of simultaneously. That's like her. Baby doll whore. Yeah.
Anyway.
So moving on. So we were going to talk about their latter, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't study up on the other records as much, but I mean, it just struck me that some of the stuff they actually put out as singles, and in particular Celebrity Skin, felt like that was an evolution for that act that made sense. And some of the production value in that song feels like it's a little bit more. I mean, maybe it masks her inadequacies as a vocalist a little bit.
I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah,
honestly, I think maybe I have no recollection
of it. You blocked her out from a bad experience.
I blocked it out.
You were abused.
Well, I was abused by Satanists.
So is that the name of the record, or was that the single off it, or was it both?
I think it was both. Yeah. I think it was both.
But if we've got one of those wrong, we'll certainly correct after that.
Oh, it is both, by the way. But I completely forgot to tell you this earlier. The best thing about this band that can be said, in my opinion, is their original band name. Which is Sweet Baby Crystal Powered by God.
That's not so bad.
That's the best thing.
Well, do you remember, and we won't
it's
linger
no
on
Funkle
this.
Sam.
It is no Funkle
Nothing
Sam.
Nothing will ever be Funkle Sam good.
But I won't linger on this too much, but you remember what the name of their first record was? Because at this time, with the whole Riot Grrrl movement,
Before Pretty on the Inside, or
no, that wasn't Pretty on the Inside. But you know, the band's name is Whole Pretty on the Inside. There was a lot of those sort of female empowerment bands had a lot of sort of dirty
Riot
illusions.
Girls.
Riot Grrrls, yeah. Do you remember the local band here, Shane? Pork.
I do remember Pork.
Yeah, they were. It was a kind
of PORQ.
No, it was just P-O-R-K.
That would be the video. That'd be the video game version.
If I'm not mistaken, it was an all female band, and they were same sex oriented and sort of angry and whatnot. I don't know if they were, but do you remember the name of their record?
No,
it was Eating Out Is Fun.
Oh God,
which was the tagline to the National Restaurant Association at the time, but.
I'm pretty sure that one of the members was married.
Oh, well, you might be right. At any rate, a lot of those female bands sort of courted the obscene, in a wink, wink, nudge, nudge kind of way.
Sure. Well, it's like that. Like it's a little bit It's not exactly the same thing, but it's a little bit like how nicknames are roller derby girls. Are all pretty similar. There's a rhyme and a reason to the way that those get put together.
And it's sexy and trashy
exactly.
all at once.
Yeah, and a little dangerous.
Alejandro Escovedo used to be married to somebody in Pork.
Well, there you go.
Pork. P-O-R-K.
There you go.
I don't know why.
Good old Pork.
Can we play Celebrity Skin?
Let's play Celebrity Skin.
This is the key word.
And I promise Celebrity Skin is not a drinking game that we're about to play.
All right. Here it is, Celebrity Skin.
Oh, look at my face. My name is Mighty Beyond. My name is never what it is. My name's forgotten. Hey, so glad you could make it.
So yeah, you can see that with that track, she obviously is played down a little. Like her vocals are not as exposed. Like it's clearly a little bit more produced than the record that we've been listening to. And I don't know. I think the hook kind of works. Like it's probably a song that I like a little bit more than most of the
I'm with
whole
it.
Songs.
It, if it came on the radio, I would not change the station, which I would not say about Doll Parts.
Sure,
it's a pretty good hook. I will. But listening to that song in particular kind of put it into focus for me how much their music is and stays of that time.
True.
there are definitely albums and songs from that period of time that were grungy that transcend that period of time. But there are some bands and albums and songs that remain mired in 1994, 95, 96.
Are you saying that you never wake up in your makeup?
I'm not saying that. Okay, I've definitely done the walk of shame.
Yeah, sure. So I
was tempted to say the walk of shame, and that was just too much of a...
That's just drum roll, please.
Yeah. I'm not even a dad.
No, well, that's our... Yeah.
That's
why Kevin got so embarrassed when I said walk of shame. Kevin immediately started turning bright red.
I like Ryan's delay, and then he gives you the knowing look and says, that I know about.
but seriously, they were a shitty band at the time, but Bush remain admired in 1994, 95, whereas Nirvana transcended that. I mean, granted, that's just part of...
Nirvana certainly did, and I just, as an aside, I'm a little bit ashamed to say and also a little proud of myself that I'll admit I saw Bush do a song on the VMAs. I think it was Machine Head, and it was pretty good. Like, I don't like that song, I don't like that band, but their performance of it once on an award show was really good. And I was like going, what the fuck? Am I liking this?
What was I saying earlier about narcissism? Was that just only imply, like...
Well, I don't know, you were talking to yourself at the time.
So yeah, gazing really into a mirror. Yeah, it was weird.
That's true, Yeah, yeah. I was going to...
It's like, looking good, Shane. No, you're looking good.
You're sounding funny tonight on the air, buddy.
Well, I don't know. I think we've learned a few things tonight along the way. We learned a little something about how much Shane hates this band. And like, to be fair, like it's a checkered record. Like
I'm leaving that alone.
Yeah, me too.
it is full of bombast and ups and downs. And
God damn, that has to be the name of your first polka album.
Bombast and Ups and Downs.
No. Checkered Record is Checkered the name Record. Of the band, and then Bombast and Ups and Downs. That's your two tone record.
It's good.
Nice.
Little ska.
I have to do is write it.
Well, what I will say, and I don't think I have brought this up, is I was actually a little bit pleasantly surprised because, like, the singles off this record, frankly, mostly suck.
Mostly.
Well, I mean, some suck more than others. I think Doll Parts just a fucking shitty song, like, all the way around. I guess maybe what she was going for might have been a nice thought. But actually, finally, you know, getting up the wherewithal to listen to the whole thing, I was surprised that there was more of it that I liked than I thought I was going to. And so for that, you know, thanks, Kev.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
well, yeah, thank you, Kevin.
Again, as has been referenced with regard to other like bands and tracks that we've talked about, I neither performed on nor was responsible for any of the recording here. But still, net of the whole thing, we learned a little bit about this record and what was going on with it. We also learned a little bit about how much and how valuable Rodney Dangerfield's sweat was.
It's, well, we know that, but we also know that his, you know, that sweat got no respect.
Well.
That's why it gets pushed back to the back of the refrigerator every time. They're going to find it.
They're going to find it behind like an old box of Arm & Hammer.
No, a couple years. Yeah.
specifically from other sweat.
When she pulls out the old Arm & Hammer box. My beloved husband's keepsake.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing.
But if she kept it on the mantle, it would evaporate.
Did she label it? Yeah.
Let's hope that like some drunken house guest isn't like, you know, trying to sort through what's left in
the
fridge.
Is this moonshine?
Yeah. I don't know. None of this makes sense. But
can you just say what I just did?
Yeah.
I just almost threw my mic at Ryan.
Oh, I thought you were doing like a glam rock maneuver.
No, I almost threw it into your eye, but I caught it the last second.
Speaking of glam rock maneuvers, do we want to talk about so who's next? Shane, are you up next?
No, Ryan.
I'm up next, and it's not glam rock.
What is it? What are you doing?
It's Hank Williams Jr., a record called High Notes.
Oh, that
High Notes!
Which the only thing I know about it, other than I know a little bit of like what his sort of
you know, is oeuvre is or what have you. But it contains it contains a cover of Norwegian Wood by the Beatles, which just for that reason alone.
I've actually been listening to High Notes today, and let me tell you some of the. Am I lying? It's. Let me tell you some of the song titles from High Notes.
It's a tight time we tackled some Bo Cephas.
If Heaven Ain't a Lot Like Dixie, The South's Gonna Rattle Again, Ain't Making No Headlines, parenthetically, Here Without You, If You Want to Get to Heaven, I'm interested in how that one sounds, Whiskey on Ice, Honky Tonkin', and Norwegian
Wood.
This Bird Has Flown.
One of these things are not like the others.
All right, well.
He's wearing a jacket on the cover that looks exactly like Michael Knight's jacket on Knight Rider.
So we're going there. That's happening. And then the week after that, Shane, you have a special treat.
I do have a treat. Dio Holy Diver.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes, I think everybody can agree with that.
Yeah, so we made
Tiny Ronnie Dio.
Circle back to some of the miniature grand tales that we told before, and much more on that record. What else, boys?
Man, I can't think of nothing.
Yeah, let's go out and
I'm just
party.
Trying to condition myself for next week.
Oh, with Hank Williams?
Yeah, Hank Williams
well,
Jr.
You chose that shit, dude.
That's right, man.
Oh, there was one more thing. We did get somebody. So somebody wrote into the website. Thanks for everybody who's listening, by the way. Somebody wrote in and asked if we take requests, Shane.
We definitely take requests. Please submit your requests.
We don't guarantee
that we're going to review them, but there's a pretty good chance that we will. So
there's a lot of music out there and a lot of weeks to come, and we've been having a ball doing it. So for those of you who are listening, thank you a lot.
Hey,
we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. What do you guys think about this? I mean, maybe, you know, there's for the most part 4 weeks in a month. We could do like a Shane, Ryan, Kevin, and then take
Let's hope, you know, let's look at the volume and quality of the requests.
Okay.
And adjust accordingly. But yeah, if we get enough.
Yeah, if somebody's punking us, then that. Yeah,
actually, I want somebody to punk us.
I'd actually kind of be okay with that.
Well,
as long as it's not Bon Jovi.
If you got a record that you want to hear us cover,
we can't guarantee that we'll think
of it exactly the way that you do, but maybe we will. And we will cuss it and discuss it.
So what if it were me, and I went and generated my own character, my own person that could submit albums, and then I relentlessly submitted Bon Jovi albums?
Okay.
Oh. But didn't let you guys know, and then at some point
I think I'd know when it sounded like Milos.
Would it be Chain?
Or Chain. Chain has a couple of alter egos. We'll get into that.
Bon Jovi.
Yeah. So anyway, we're running deep into the podcast at this point. But thank you again. This has been fun.
Been a pleasure.
This is Kevin.
This is Ryan.
Shane.
This is Somebody Likes It. We'll see you next week.